Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the TCS Earnings Conference Call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Kedar Shirali. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Karuna. Good evening and welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today to discuss TCS financial results for the fourth quarter and full year of fiscal year 2016, ending March 31st, 2016. This call is being webcast through our website, and an archive, including the transcript, will be available on the site for the duration of this quarter. The financial statements, quarterly fact sheet, and press releases are also available on our website. Our leadership team is present on this call to discuss our results. We have with us today Mr. N. Chandrasekaran, Chief Executive Officer and Managing Director.
Hello, everyone.
Mr. Rajesh Gopinathan, Chief Financial Officer.
Good evening, everyone.
Mr. Ajoy Mukherjee, Executive Vice President and Head of Global Human Resources.
Hi, everyone.
Chandra and Rajesh will give a brief overview of the company's performance, followed by a Q&A session. As you are aware, we don't provide specific revenue or earnings guidance, and anything said on this call which reflects our outlook for the future or which could be construed as a forward-looking statement must be reviewed in conjunction with the risks that the company faces. We have outlined these risks in the second slide of the quarterly fact sheet available on our website and emailed out to those who have subscribed to our mailing list. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Chandra.
Thank you, Kedar. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all of you. We have ended the fiscal year 2016 on Q4 on a relatively stronger note. For the quarter, we have delivered a robust volume growth of 3.2% quarter on quarter, which is very impressive for a seasonally weak quarter. That resulted in a constant currency revenue growth of 2.1% QOQ and a rupee revenue growth of 4% QOQ and a USD revenue growth of 1.5% QOQ. Our operating margin during the quarter was 26.1% at the operating level, and the net margin was at 22.3%. For the full year, constant currency revenues grew by 11.9%, an incremental revenue addition of $1.83 billion. Volume growth was at 12% over the prior year, while the constant currency realization were flattish. In INR terms, our revenues crossed a trillion rupee mark this year, clocking rupees 1.086 trillion, a growth of 14.8% year on year. The reported USD numbers, on the other hand, were severely distorted by a cross-currency impact of 4.8%, resulting in USD revenue growth of 7.1% year on year. Coming to the margin, we had the gross margin of 43.9% and an operating margin for the year of 26.5%, well within our preferred range of 26 to 28%. Net margin for the year was at 22.3%. From a client metrics point of view, our customer-centric business model and our philosophy of investing in building newer capabilities to continually broaden our participation in our customers' IT spending has paid us rich dividends. Our client metrics continue to be outstanding. During the quarter, we added three more clients to the 100 million band and eight customers in the 50 million band and 17 in the 10 million band. For the full year, we added eight more clients in the 100 million revenue band, bringing the total to 37. And in the 10 million revenue band, we added 37 clients this year, bringing the total to 298. Now let me give you some color on how the various segments performed. Given the severity of the currency-induced distortion, I will stick to only constant currency numbers in the rest of my commentary tonight. In Q4, growth was led by BFSI, which grew 3.2% QOQ. Clearly, the weakness in insurance is now behind us, and even Diligenta is bottoming out. Three other verticals, retail, manufacturing, energy and utilities, also grew above the company average during the quarter. Geography-wise, North America grew by 2.4% and continental Europe by 3.6% QOQ, India at 2.2% and Middle East and Africa at 9.5% on a QOQ basis. From amongst our services, growth came from asset leverage solutions, engineering and industrial services, assurance and infrastructure services. For the full year, the growth was led by a strong performance in BFSI, which grew at 11.7% year-on-year, an acceleration over the prior year's growth. Excluding insurance, our banking and financial services business grew at 14.8% year-on-year. Besides BFS, another five verticals, retail, manufacturing, licenses and healthcare, energy and utilities, and travel and hospitality, all grew above the company average growth in constant currency terms. Geography-wise, growth was fairly well distributed, with smaller geographies like Latin America, Asia-Pacific, Middle East and Africa showing higher growth. From a services perspective, growth was led by asset leverage solutions, infrastructure services, and assurance. In terms of demand, the key events this quarter, we signed seven large deals, which were distributed across six verticals, two in banking, one each in insurance, manufacturing, healthcare, high-tech, and media. Geography-wise, North America accounted for five out of the seven deals, and of the remaining two, we had one each in continental Europe and United Kingdom. If you step back and look at what have been the broad drivers of demand for our services, we can put them into three broad categories: digital adoption, the quest for efficiency, and simplification. All the three are interlinked, but of these, customers are most excited by the possibilities opened up by digital technologies and are investing big time. Their digital programs are now well established and progressing well. The scope and size of programs are continually increasing. Revenues from digital engagement grew in double digits QOQ and made up 15.5% of our Q4 revenues. For the full year, digital revenues made up 13.8% of revenues, crossing the 2 billion mark, a growth rate of 52.2% over the prior year. Within the digital stack, our digital marketing, mobility revenues crossed 1 billion milestone in FY16. Over 52% of our clients have engaged us for digital services, and in many of the key verticals, we are the primary digital partner for our large clients in those verticals. Many investments made over the last several years have helped us achieve this level of trust. Let me now spend a couple of minutes on these investments. We firmly believe that there are only legacy technologies and not legacy people. Our response to technology change has always been to invest in reskilling our people. This is how we adapted when mainframes gave way to client servers and client servers gave way to web technologies. Now, as digital adoption proceeds, we are once again in the midst of another transformation of our workforce. Only this time, the scale, the complexity, and rapidity of change are of a different order of magnitude. Digital is not any one technology or any one particular skill. To be relevant in the digital era, we need the soft skills, the design skills, multi-technology skills, and most importantly, strong domain skills. We are responding to the challenges of the digital revolution in a couple of ways. First, we are hiring individuals with the right, in fact, very diverse, sometimes niche skills, quite different from our historical preference for engineers. This has resulted in a very rich, multidisciplinary teams that can examine design problems from very different viewpoints and deliver very creative outcomes. Second, we have fundamentally reimagined our approach to talent development. At the center of this new approach is our digital learning platform, an integrated ecosystem that combines virtual, physical, and experiential learning with high-quality content available from anywhere, any place, anytime, and on any device. The platform offers courses on 400 different digital tools, platforms, and skill sets, and allows individuals to pick what they need to learn and learn it the way they can and they want to the extent of depth that they require in their particular role. From a push model, we have now moved to an employee-centric pull model, which is more in line with the demands of the digital era and also the millennial mindset. Feedback from our employees has been immensely positive, and the outcomes have far exceeded our expectations. In FY2016, we were able to impart over 349,000 competencies to over 120,000 plus employees. There is another transformation that is underway at TCS today, which is even more fundamental to our delivery model. In the digital era, where customers are investing in leveraging these new technologies to transform themselves and gain competitive advantage, speed is of the essence, and therefore, agility is key. Consequently, New projects use agile development or DevOps by default, and we are systematically driving agile adoption across the company. They successfully demonstrated that a globally distributed delivery model can significantly leverage agile and have plenty of instances of successfully delivering very large programs using agile DevOps in our global network delivery model framework. For one European telco, we delivered a program with over 90% offshore or global leverage out of the 13 global locations. For US financial services clients, we use agile delivery with over 80% offshore leverage using 14 global locations. These kinds of engagements entail a different style of working, and we have invested in building very collaborative workspaces required for this purpose in our development centers. A big part of the success we have had in the digital space has been on account of the industry-specific innovation that we have been able to develop and proactively offer to our clients. Some of you who visited our executive briefing center last month in Mumbai have seen live examples of how we have leveraged digital technologies to help our clients in different industry verticals reimagine their businesses. These solutions are conceptualized and designed through collaboration between domain experts and the technology experts at our various innovation centers. These groups are now working on emerging areas like blockchain and frictionless access in banking. In-store experience and multi-node supply chains in retail, connected cars and predictive maintenance in manufacturing, genomics and medical sciences in life sciences area are form part of this. Then there is a foundational research where a core research and development team is focused on emerging areas like metagenomics, materials, machine learning, cognitive computing, and so on. In addition, we look for innovation from outside TCS as well. Our co-innovation network is a very scalable program to tap into the innovation pools within academia and the startup ecosystem. In the startup universe, we have cast a wide net screening over 1,400 startups from across the world. After detailed evaluation and fitment, we have engaged with around 38 of them to do a couple of things, either go jointly to the market or sometimes integrate their solutions and products into our overall solution for the client or to our products. The other important area I should talk about is the design studio and our investment in the executive briefing center. The other model we are following is one of co-innovation with our customers. To facilitate this, we have invested in building co-innovation workspaces. Our one such facility is our digital reimagination studio in Santa Clara, staffed by top-notch talent from across the globe. These creative-led multidisciplinary teams work closely with our customer teams, applying the principles of design thinking to ideate, develop, and even prototype creative digital solutions to our clients' business problems. Likewise, the Executive Briefing Center that some of you have seen at our Banyan Park campus in Mumbai is another such workspace where we not only showcase many of our on-the-ground digital solutions, but also collaborate and co-innovate with our clients on new ones. The fifth form of investment we are making is in building our own digital intellectual property. We now have a portfolio of digital products and platforms, some in the technology space, some in the horizontal functions, and others which cater to industry-specific needs. Last year, around this time, I had spoken of our 7 cloud platforms, and they had crossed the 100 million mark in terms of annual revenue run rate. This year, those platforms have delivered 175 million, a growth rate of 37% year on year. Ion Assessment continues to be on a roll, crossing a major milestone this year. As of March 31st, it had assessed more than 50 million candidates, including 7.7 million in Q4, and delivered an 88% reduction in turnaround time. Chroma, our HR platform to enable next generation employee experience, is gaining good traction in the market. In FY16, it was adopted by 4 clients, including one in Q4. TAP, our accounts payable platform, also did well, winning 5 clients this year, including 2 in Q4. Our integrated urban exchange and our customer intelligence and insights products both had a win each in Q4. In June last year, we launched Ignio, the world's first neural automation system for IT operations in enterprises, creating a brand new category that we call services as a software. With its cognitive capabilities, Ignio is technologically ahead of automation products in the market. We have filed 24 patents around Ignio till date and have some more in the pipeline. Ignio has proven itself in very diverse customer environments using its context-aware capabilities to deliver incredible returns, even in use cases quite different from the usual infrastructure maintenance services. For example, a US-based financial services client, Ignio, has been able to compress the time taken to run proactive IT health diagnostics from 4 hours to 10 minutes. For another client, Ignio has been able to streamline the employee onboarding process, which used to take several days, to complete it in less than 2 hours. This has generated a lot of interest amongst clients and prospects. Since the launch, we have signed up 16 customers for Ignio. In addition to the horizontal platforms and technology products, we have also invested in building a portfolio of industry-specific digital products and platforms. Our advanced digital merchandising suite, Optumera, is showing a big promise with two retailers as our customers. Two leading retailers adopted these products in FY16, including one in Q4. Likewise, TCS's advanced drug development product is transforming the clinical trial process for our customers. Today, 3 out of the top 10 pharma companies are using this software product. In FY16, we had 7 wins in this area, including one in Q4. TCS Hobbs, our comprehensive pre-integrated suite of hosted OSS BSS applications and pre-modeled business processes, is finding good traction with 16 clients using it in various modules. In FY16, we had 6 new client wins for this platform, including one in Q4. From a people front, we have ended the year with 353,843 employees, adding over 90,000 employees on a gross basis and over 34,000 employees on a net basis. Attrition rate continues to be on a downward trend. Q4 attrition on a LTM basis has come down further by 60 bps QOQ to 14.7% in IT services. For FY17, we have announced a wage increase of 8% on the average and going up to 12% for top performers for employees in India. In other geographies, the increase ranges from 2 to 6%. Further, we have done away with the bell curve for post-performance ranking. Performance ranking is now based on individual performance. With all our investments in training, increased employee engagement, and implementation of employee-friendly practices, we expect further improvement in employee satisfaction and retention levels in FY 2017. The improved retention and increased productivity should also result in reduced overall hiring next year. In addition, we have worked on automation of many of the engagements that we are doing. So we expect about 32,000 trainees to join us from the campus offers made in FY16. Any other lateral addition will be very calibrated, but I can tell you it will be a much lower figure compared to FY16. Equally, we are focused on reducing our dependency on work visas. I would like to say that we are focused on reducing our dependency on work visas through increased local hiring and leveraging of the global delivery network. In FY16, that is this month, in April, we have applied for only a third of the work visas that we had applied for in the prior year. We have taken in significant number of local recruits in all markets, including from university campuses. Today, we believe we are one of the biggest recruiters in the markets in which we operate, particularly the United States. When we look at FY17, while we don't give revenue or earnings guidance, there are a number of business trends that give me great confidence. First, we are witnessing a dramatic acceleration in digital spending by customers. Their focus is now shifting from pure front-end work of prior years to a tighter integration with their existing application stacks. With speed to market being critical, our scale and digital capability positions us strongly to become the preferred digital partner for more and more clients and win a disproportionate share of their incremental spending. Second, large segments of our business, BFSI, North America, and continental Europe, have shown very good resilience and have grown very well in Q4 with a good exit, building up strong momentum going into FY17. Third, all the major headwinds from the same time last year, be it Diligenta, insurance, or Japan, have all softened. In fact, Latin America has actually turned the corner and has done very well during the last couple of quarters, and India has done well reasonably this quarter. Lastly, our order book is looking good and our deal pipeline is strong. Customer metrics are looking excellent. Our digital platforms are gaining customer traction and are in a growth mode. So all in all, we are well placed to deliver a strong year in FY 2017. Before I conclude, I wanted to make a brief statement on the adverse jury verdict from the recently completed trial in a lawsuit filed against the TCS Vapix Systems in the Court of Western District Madison, Wisconsin. We want to reiterate that TCS did not misuse or derive any benefit from any of the documents downloaded from the Vapix Systems user web portal. We have already issued a press statement as the case is with the court. We would not like to make any further statements as far as this particular case is concerned. This is something that I wanted to share with you and conclude my speech. Over to you, Rajesh.
Thank you, Chandra. I'll quickly just go through the headline numbers once again before we turn it over for questions. In the fourth quarter, our revenues grew 2.1% Q-on-Q on a constant currency basis. In INR terms, we had a cross-currency benefit of 1.9%, resulting in a reported revenue of 284.486 billion, which is a sequential growth of 4% and a year-on-year growth of 17.5%. In USD terms, cross-currency impact was 60 basis points negative, resulting in a reported revenue of $4.207 billion, which is a Q-on-Q growth of 1.5% and a year-on-year growth of 7.9%. The constant currency growth of 2.1% is made up of a volume growth of 3.2% and a realization impact of negative 1.1%. Our full-year revenue for FY16 was $1.086 trillion and a year-on-year growth of 14.8% in INR terms. In US dollar terms, our revenue was $16.545 billion and translates into an annual growth of 7.1%. Our constant currency revenue growth for the year is 11.9%, which is made up of a volume growth of 12% and a constant currency realization of a flattish negative 0.1%. With our incremental revenue on a constant currency basis is $1.83 billion, the reported incremental revenue is $1.1 billion, with cross-currency movements during the year erasing nearly $750 million of our revenue. Operating margin, at the operating margin level, these currency movements resulted in a benefit of 0.6%, mitigating the 1.1% increase in expenses, mainly towards our various investments. So overall, our operating margins are at 26.1% for the quarter and at 26.5% for the full year. Net income for the fourth quarter stayed flat at 22.3%, and for the full year, net income margin declined 0.6% year-on-year to 22.3%. Our effective tax rate for the year is at 23.6%. In cash flow terms, we ended this quarter with a cash from operations of 22.5% and overall cash from operations of rupees 64.1 billion. For the full year, net cash from operations amounted to 233.8 billion, which is 21.5% of revenue, and free cash flow was 214.2 billion, a growth of 17% year on year. After paying out rupees 95.15 billion in dividends during the year, our invested funds as of March 31st is at rupees 329.3 billion. The board has recommended a dividend of rupees 27, bringing the total for the year to rupees 43.5 per share, a payout ratio of 42% on our consolidated profits. With that, we open the line for questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Thank you. First question is from the line of Divya Nagarajan from UBS. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. Congrats on the good execution in the quarter. Two questions for you, Chandra. In your earlier remarks on CNBC, you talked about having the leeway to invest with your margin within your margin band. My question to you is, what form of investment would that essentially be? What are the key areas that you're thinking of in terms of investment?
I think we have primarily said that we'll operate in the 26 to 28 band, and most of the investments are going in building out our digital business. And the digital business is picking up momentum. When it is picking up momentum, we don't want to be shy of any investments. So we want to have the flexibility. Whether, I think if you look at the investments that we have made, they're pretty significant. We have probably are undertaking the largest digital training exercise of any corporation in any part of the world. Already 120,000 people have been trained, over 350,000 plus competencies. We have built a state-of-the-art digital learning platform which brings physical and digital together. We have an innovative iPlus framework which integrates the digital learning with the physical workspace. We have built a number of platforms, foundation platforms, technology platforms or functional platforms, and industry domain solution-based platforms. I walked through some of them in the commentary that I gave, and as we see opportunities, we are not shying away from making those investments. Then in terms of the physical workspaces, whether it is building out design studios or building out executive briefing centers, there are many such investments happening. So I think it is in people, it is in infrastructure, it is in the area of intellectual property, creative thinking workspaces. I think it's of different nature. Then we are also winning a lot of cloud business. We are also winning a business that integrates different digital technologies and transformative redesign of business processes. So I think all this requires a large number of investments, and that's what I meant.
So that, just one more question for me, then I'll come up for a follow-up. In the past couple of quarters, we had cited some sporadic instances of irrational pricing in the market. Has that eased? How do you see the price competition in the market today?
So as I have always said that, you know, you always see sporadic situations of pricing, which we find it strange, but those things do happen, and it is not that we don't see that happening, but it is not any different from what we have faced before. So this is something that happens, and we have said that our pricing has... is generally stable. There may be variations in between quarters, and we have seen that play out this year as well. So that's something that we've got to watch out for, but I wouldn't put a cautionary statement on that.
Thanks, sir. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ashwin Mehta from Nomura Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Chandra. Congrats on good numbers. Just two questions. One, while digital has grown well for you, wanted to check on the outlook for the non-digital piece of business, which seems to be flattish for us for the past two quarters. Do we see an acceleration that in that going forward?
I think if you look at service lines, they're doing very well on asset leverage. Some of it... is digital platforms, some of it is non-digital platforms and products. And then we are doing very well in infrastructure. We are seeing good momentum in engineering and industrial services this time. We are also seeing good momentum in assurance. But, you know, each of these service lines also morph into digital. So when we say digital, it is cutting across all these service lines. As we go into the future, more and more of these service lines will transform themselves and exhibit themselves as digital. So that's what you should look for. So digital should not be seen as another service line. Digital is to be seen as a transformation that is happening across service lines so that the world is, as the world goes towards digital.
Okay, okay, fair enough. Second question is in terms of what are the items on your cost side, which is cost of equipment and software? That seems to have jumped by almost 40% this quarter. It's more than half of your incremental revenues. So what is causing such a sharp jump? Because typically geographies like MEA and India is what causes the jump in equipment sales, and they don't seem to have contributed that much to incremental revenues.
Ashwin, if you look at it on a Q-on-Q basis, it's one, but if you go back, it's about 2.5 is our typical average. You would find that if you go back and look at it in the last year's numbers. That line item of cost reflects third-party equipment or software that we buy in part of our servicing of customers. It could be system integration deals, it could be cloud deals, it could be managed services deals, and any of those line items. So it's broadly in line with our long-term average, and beyond that, there's nothing much to call out on it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ankur Rudra from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Congrats on a great quarter. To begin with, Chandra, if you could, obviously you've done very well in banking, financial services, and insurance this time. How do you see the rest of the year shaping out given the recent challenges we've seen from banks? Are you expecting your market share gain to overcome the headline challenges?
Yeah, I think when we met in March in the analyst day, I clearly articulated that we are seeing good traction in the BFSI space. If you look at our BFSI revenue, for the year it grew at 11.8%, and BFS revenues grew at 14.8%. So obviously insurance was a drag last year, and insurance has turned the corner. So that is an added confidence that we get that the BFSI is going to do well, and it's going to be a strong year for the BFS segment in FSRG.
Great. Also, if you could help me with one thing, we've seen some progressive changes in disclosures in operating metrics such as on-site offshore utilization. I understand this is probably because of change in your business model. If you could elaborate, why this is less relevant now, and also the new metrics that, investors should be looking at beyond the headline numbers. Thanks.
We continue to maintain, from a global benchmarking perspective, one of the highest disclosure standards in this industry. And as the business becomes more complex and business models become more heterogeneous, some of these metrics like utilization will steadily lose relevance as we go more and more into investment-centric business models. As the business models develop and as they mature and stabilize, we will consider what kind of new metrics could be used. And we constantly monitor the disclosures coming from our competitive set to get an assessment of where the metric side of it is going. I would like to assure you that we will remain among the best quality disclosures, and as new metrics become available, we'll share with you.
Thanks. Just last question, if I could just squeeze in. As you mentioned that you're moving to front office to full stack implementation many of your digital clients. As this happens, do you think the ability to leverage offshore and asset leverage solutions that you've been developing over the last several years to improve, and hence gross margins on those kind of deals to improve as well? Thanks.
I think there is an opportunity there because there are many things are playing out here. A very strong integration capability, a very strong backend capability in addition to the front-end capability, and the tools, automation, all those things will play a part. But at the same time, from a gross margin perspective, it's okay, but we should not forget that investment cycles are going to continue, because when we see an inflection point, when we see the momentum continue, we don't want to be shy.
I understand. Thank you, and best of luck.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nitin Mota from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Chandra, I had a specific question on the infrastructure services practice, another solid year of 20% CC growth. There are two-part question. Firstly, there are some concerns amongst investors as deals come up for renewal. Do you think there is more pricing pressure that we are seeing in this particular practice? And secondly, as we have seen a very solid 10 years of growth in this underpenetrated area, are we going to see kind of plateauing of growth rates?
I think there are two answers I'd like to give. In terms of pricing pressure, I already said there will be sporadic instances. There will be companies which will try to be very sharp on the pricing. But to my point of view, infrastructure has a huge growth opportunities, and there is a tremendous transformative play here with private cloud, on-premise private cloud, off-premise private cloud, public cloud, not from the infrastructure point of view, but what happens to everything that is sitting on top of it. How do we integrate and deliver value? That is something that they've been pretty successful and we are seeing traction. So I feel that we should look at that and look at the differentiation in the play. But we just can't be looking at a commodity pricing.
Got that. So we should consider that these kind of growth rates sustainable. You don't think we are going to hit a plateau given that it's been such a solid performer for the industry overall?
I'm not giving guidance, but I think that area has a lot of growth ahead.
Thank you. Good luck for 17.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sandeep Agarwal from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks to the management team for taking my question. Chandra, I have one question. While I understand that, you know, digital, as you said, that it has grown at 52% year over year and digital cannot be bifurcated from verticals or service lines. But if you exclude the digital part, does it look like that, you know, the non-digital part of the business is growing at a very, very low rate? And if yes, then what is actually hitting us there? And my question is also followed by, on the enterprise solution and consulting side, I think that is one area where we have not done probably well this year. So what is your view there and what is impacting us on that side? And finally, one question to Rajesh. While you have given a narrow band, a margin band of 26 to 28, but will it be on a year-over-year basis you're saying, or there could be quarterly volatilities or even yearly volatilities in that range? Thank you.
As I said, digital should not be looked at as a service line. The key service lines we report all have digital components. And whether it is enterprise solutions, whether you have infrastructure, I mean, you've got to look at all those things. There is a digital play. The digital play comes from three major areas, which is big data analytics, digital marketing, mobile channels, and then cloud. So when you look at all these three, they penetrate across service lines. So taking that and then comparing, leaving the rest will not give you the right comparison. So I would request you or suggest that you don't do that kind of a comparison. Second, with respect to enterprise solutions and consulting, I think we have taken a couple of steps where we have integrated these two practices to bring in the necessary capabilities that is particularly required in the future from a digital point of view, what it means to provide the consultative capability. So you should see growth from here.
On the margin front, we are very happy with our overall performance during the year. We are ending at 26.5, which is fairly in the midpoint of our stated target band. And on a cash generation perspective also, it has been a good year. We will be ending the year with free cash to revenue of about 21.5%, and this quarter has been at 22.5%. So overall, the profitability performance has been very good. And as we build out into a more heterogeneous business model, we are committed to chasing opportunity and doing the investment that is required to make sure that we maintain our leadership position. The impact of that on margins, we believe, is containable, but the period-to-period numbers will depend on a complex set of how the growth pans out and how the currency impacts and certain other variations that could happen on a period-to-period basis. But structurally, the pricing side is stable, demand side is positive. Overall, we see very strong momentum in the areas where we have made investments, and therefore we remain optimistic on the profitability side.
Thank you. That's all from my side.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sagar Rastogi from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Could you explain what drove the margin drop this quarter?
We had a fairly good performance, and the idea about having a kind of a broad range is to be able to give us the flexibility to operate within that. In terms of your numbers, gross margins were down about 90 bips and we pulled back some of it on the SG&A side, primarily driven from benefits on the employee part of it, the manpower cost. So net-net we are ending with about 50 bips down compared to that. And for the full year, we are at 26.5, which is net of an exchange impact of about 130 bips positive. So broadly, it's in line with what we were thinking.
Sorry, Rajesh, would you be able to split out the impact of INR depreciation, the realization, like you used to earlier?
Yes. Impact of INR depreciation for the quarter is 60 basis points out of it, and for the full year is 130 basis points. Realization, we don't split out. The rest of it is business impact.
Any other questions, Sagar?
Oh, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sandeep Patangi from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I wanted to chip in a quick question about some of the automation initiatives you might be doing. Chandra, when do you see as the tipping point for some of these automation initiatives to gain real scale? Would we be looking at second half of 17 or FY18 to be the year when some of these things become really material? And also, what would your strategy be when they become material? Would you be competing on the price point, or would it be just gaining more efficiencies and using it as a margin lever?
I think, Sandeep, if you really look at the charts I presented in the March meeting, we have shown that our incremental revenue per person, or basically the headcount addition over the incremental revenue for the last 5 years, has consistently gotten better, with the last calendar year showing about $100,000. That's a pretty significant and steep progress if you really look at where we are as an overall average, and we have shown the numbers for 2009 and where we are today, and so on. And it is a result of many things, some utilization, and also a result of many of the automation and business model changes that we have been proactively bringing in. So I believe that we are at a stage that we will see benefits accruing from an automation point of view, whether it is in managed services contract or in infrastructure contracts or in other types of contracts. And we have done some engagements, and we have done some thinking and work and so on and so forth. That is why in my opening commentary I clearly said that we will see a reduction in the gross hiring numbers, a material reduction in the gross hiring numbers. If you look at the gross hiring numbers over the last several years, it has gone up year on year for the past several years. And this year, you will see a big trend in terms of reduction, material reduction in the gross numbers. That is our estimate. So how it will pan out, let's wait and watch. And what we will do, how will we compete, this will evolve. We have options in front of us, but we need to evolve this.
Right. Thanks so much for that. And just one quick question. I'm not sure if you will be able to answer this, but I'll ask it anyway. In terms of the timeline of the case, could we get some clarity on the Epic case about what are the next steps, and are you waiting for the judge's verdict, or what's the basic timeline we are looking for?
I think as we had said in the press statement, the judge verdict will come in 6 weeks' time. About 6 weeks' time is what we know. And after that, depending upon the outcome, we have an opportunity to appeal.
Okay.
That's all I can say.
Yeah. Thanks for the clarification, Chandra. All the best for the year ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sandeep Shah from CIMB. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congrats on a good execution. So there any discussion with your clients indicates that the client may be a bit cautious in terms of releasing the digital IT spend looking at the volatile macro, or do you believe the digital spend sensitivity to macro will not be that big versus what we used to see earlier in terms of the traditional discretionary spend?
From what I see, I can tell you that the discretionary spend on digital is happening.
Okay. And even the client discussion does not foresee any kind of conservatism about the some amount of skepticism now in terms of the macro headwinds spreading from Asia to developed countries. Or
I have not heard it in any of my discussions. Okay. Or any of my management team, they have not heard anything and highlighted.
Okay. And Rajesh, just in terms of margins, generally we exit the financial year with a better margin exit rates. This time we are exiting with the lower end of our comfort of 26 to 28. When we enter FY17, there could be some additional headwinds through declining currency benefits. There could be higher visa charges, which could be because of US fees increase as well as some UK visa change regulations. So do you believe this time the challenge could be slightly higher in FY17 in terms of managing the margin band of 26-28?
I think you are right. FY17 is going to pose quite a few challenges which will have negative impact on the margin. But equally, FY17 also has a fair amount of positives. So if you look at it, the momentum in our larger segments, whether it be the US market or the banking market, continues to be strong, and that provides us quite a lot of comfort. Similarly, our investments across the board are doing quite well. While we are likely to continue to remain in an investment mode, but scale in these investments and momentum in these investments gives us a lot of confidence. And as Chandra has been mentioning, areas like automation, areas in terms of digital learning, productivity, etc., are all positive elements on the margin side of it. So it's going to be a tough year. I will have to earn my salary. But there are negative elements and there are positive elements. We'll see how it plays out.
Okay. And just follow up, any quantification for the UK visa rule change about the salaries?
No, we're not quantifying the impact of
next year.
No?
That's next year.
Okay. Thank you.
But I want you to take note of the opening commentary I gave. We have made significant efforts over the last few years to reduce our dependency on visas in every market. And both in the US and UK it is true. And we believe that we are a top recruiter in both these markets among other markets. And we have filed 1/3 of the work visa applications this year than we filed last year in the US. And the number of applications we will require in the UK this year will also be less, considerably less compared to last year as we go into the future. And that's the business model which we are operating on.
Okay. Thanks. Helpful.
Thank you. And next question is from the line of Ravi Menon from Elara Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and congratulations for a great year. You managed attrition so well and wrapped up the gross hiring to meet that. So I had two questions. One is that the ISC deal data says that deal awards have been pretty strong, even in restructuring contracts. Your comments also seem encouraging regarding that. Would you say deal awards over the last 3 to 6 months were significantly better than during the first half of FY16?
I couldn't get the question.
ISC.
I think from a deal momentum point of view, all I can say is that I'm more interested to say that the headwinds we had 6 months ago are not there today. The deal momentum from a company point of view, our own business perspective, but from the deal momentum point of view, it continues to be good, continues to be solid.
Right. Do you think that the client environment too has improved compared to last year, the demand environment overall?
See, from the demand environment point of view, as I said, digital has significantly improved.
Right.
And many of the other deals you are talking about is all connected with digital in one form or another.
Sure, thank you. And one more follow-up. Do you think that the digital learning platform that you described for use for your employees, can it also be opened up to clients to retrain their workforce?
Let me put it this way. We have a lot to do at this point in time. So we are focused on completing the retraining of our 300,000 plus employees. The digital learning platform is getting enhanced. New experience is coming up all the time. Potentially it has got opportunities, but at this point in time we are pretty focused on what we need to achieve.
Thank you and best of luck for FSMT.
Thank you. Next person is from the line of Shashi Bhushan from IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Shashi.
Yeah. So we talked about BFS to be stronger in FY17. What is driving the confidence? Is it our discussion with clients, deal pipeline, or deal wins, and some insight in BFS in terms of service line that are resulting in the optimism?
I think, as I said, the BFS segment last year delivered a 14.8%. BFSI segment delivered 11.8%. So the 14.8, which is a BFS segment, came down to 11.8 because of the overhang we had in insurance. And Diligent Times is part of insurance overall from a segment perspective. And we feel that the BFS momentum is continuing to be there, and we have come off the headwinds we had in the insurance. So overall, BFSI should do better. Should do well. It's a strong year. So that's where the confidence comes from. Obviously, it has to be followed up with the fact that we are winning deals and everything else.
Sure. And as we are towards the lower end of the margin guidance in terms of exit rate, do you think that our ability to invest in the business has diminished, or is there a possibility of lowering our margin guidance if that becomes hindrance to growth?
Shashi, we have 32,900 crores on the balance sheet and 26.5% margin, 21.5% cash performance, which is way ahead of anybody else in the business. If this does not give us the ability to invest, something must be seriously wrong with us.
Sure, sir. Thanks a lot for taking my question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Chopra from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Chandra, you touched upon the turnaround in multiple weak segments in the opening remarks. I just wanted to understand in particular about two of them. So while areas like India and Latin America have been more volatile, I think Diligenta and secondly Japan have been in a slightly more secular decline. So how would you see those panning out going forward, the latter two?
So Diligenta has been consistently dropping for the past several quarters, definitely the last four, by a good drop. And now it is bottom drop. Okay, so we believe that from here, it will be at least flattish, if not growth. So that's where it is. And in Japan, also we believe that has bottomed out and it needs to grow. It will grow, but how much it will grow is something that I can't tell.
Sure. And would you like to call out any segment or a sub-segment within the portfolio right now which would probably be the most challenging in the overall business for TCS?
As I have said, if you look at the metrics even this quarter, where the constant currency growth has been 2.1%, all segments except high-tech have all grown. So no particular segment has a specific headwind that I can call out at this point in time. But all of them grow at a different pace. We feel pretty good about our large segments like BFSI, retail, manufacturing, life sciences, travel. And the energy resource utilities have done well this quarter, though we have some energy headwinds. So I believe that will do well as well. Telecom and media has had challenges last year. And this year, I think it's out of the woods. But how much it will grow, we'll wait and watch.
Sure, that's encouraging. And just lastly, from my side, on the asset leverage solutions business, so I assume that the regional split of that business would be very different than overall TCS's business. Just would there be any particular regions where the growth has been particularly strong in on the product side, or would it have been across the board?
I think it's across the board, and it will be a different mix from the TCS services mix. But there is no lopsided effect for many markets.
Okay, okay. That's it from my side. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nitin Padmanabhan from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. You spoke about the investments in hiring a lot of locals across the U.S. and U.K. over the past 2 years. I just wanted to understand where are we today versus where we were a few years ago. How close are we to possibly the 50% of the headcount there being locals today, and how much more is there to go?
So I think I don't want to give specific numbers. As you said, we are increasingly becoming, wanting to become and becoming less dependent on workers. And that is the direction we have taken. And as I said, the number of visas we applied for this year is far lower compared to last year.
Sure. The other thing was, do you think that would be an additional headwind on margins for this particular year?
In terms of margin, this whole issue needs to be seen in perspective. On a like-to-like basis, at an on-site cost, expats are not any less expensive than local recruits. The decision between local versus expat is a purely a business decision based on the quality of the supply available, the nature of the demand, the mobility requirements of the job, and the the interest of the various stakeholders. It is not a margin-driven call, and I wouldn't see it having a substantial impact on the margins.
Sure, that's helpful. Thank you so much, and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aniket Pandey from Carvey Stockbroking. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Sir, given the impetus on the digital in the business, just wanted to understand, in that case, every company is focusing on digital business and they are able to grow also. So how TCS could be able to give a competitive edge to its competitor, and what are the EBITDA margins in this digital business, and how is the digital business environment in coming next 2 to 3 years?
I think, as I said, clearly the investments that we have made in digital, which we articulated, from a talent perspective, from intellectual perspective, property perspective, industry domain, as well as technology expertise that we bring, the type of hiring we are doing, the different skill sets that we bring, the spaces for creative thinking, the design studios, many such investments we are making, and we built some very unique solutions. And as it goes along, and that will differentiate ourselves. But apart from that, what can I say? I think while there will be individual engagements, which will be of a particular margin, but the investment cycle will continue to build out this.
Okay. Thank you, sir. That's all from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of the Dipen Seth from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thanks for the opportunity. Just one quick follow-up on the UK business, which I suppose the drag is obviously a result of the drag in Diligenta. But still, the fourth quarter exit CC growth is actually negative, right? On a full-year basis, the UK business might look optically, excusable, let's say, at 8.3%, but the fourth quarter exit looks particularly weak. So the specific question is this directly related to Diligenta, which would be what, 13-14% of the UK business?
Okay, I think that's a good question, and I think Kedar is indicating that after this question, I'll be making the concluding remarks. This answer to this question will very nicely fit into my concluding remarks. So with your permission, I would like to start the concluding remarks. And as part of the remarks, I'll address this question.
Please.
I think the key thing that I would like to highlight is the exit rate in general for FY16 as leave compared to where we were in FY15 is lower at the company level. For a Diligenta business, definitely it will be lower because during the last four quarters consistently it has been a drag, and so every quarter the drag has affected the growth rate, so you are obviously ending up with a much lower growth rate. So my commentary is that definitely we are at a lower exit rate compared to last year at the same time. But last year at this point in time, I had singled out and called out many drags or many headwinds, whether it is diligence, whether it is Japan, whether it is insurance, whether it is telecom media, the energy vertical sometime during the year. So there are many such instances. And the thing that I feel good about in Q4 performance is, first of all, I am happy and relieved that we have been able to deliver a very good quarter, meeting the expectations and some places exceeding the expectations. But the point here is the footprint is very good. The volume growth of 3.2% on a seasonally weak quarter, particularly when we coming off of a very bad Q3. And if you look at the core sectors, the banking, North America, the continental Euro, which are important segments for us to watch out, are all exiting nicely. The headwinds, the same time that I talked about last year, they have bottomed out, and I'm not seeing those headwinds in this market. And the digital business is gaining traction and gain scale, and we are seeing that incremental contribution of the digital business to our overall business as a percentage rapidly it's improving. And many of the investments that we have made in digital, although we continue to make more investments, are beginning to deliver results in terms of customer wins, and as a result, revenue is going forward. So I think the footprint is very good. So that's what I feel good about in this quarter. Not so much the specific numbers. I would take a good footprint than a better number and a poorer footprint. When I say footprint, the operating metrics, the different things that you look at. If you look at the customer metrics, it's incredibly good metrics. So from a 2,900 million customers to 37, of which 3 happened this quarter. A significant increase in the 15 million customers, of which 8 happened this quarter. So I think the customer metrics is absolutely top class. And our key initiatives, whether it is digital learning, or whether it is investments that we have made in the workspaces and thought leadership that we are trying to build and build that profile that's required in order to be able to partners is very good. I also pointed out that 52% of our customers see us as the key partner of choice for digital. So given all this, I think we are in a good place. How it translates into business growth rates, we'll have to wait and see. Thank you for your patience, and I deeply appreciate taking the time for this call.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of TCS, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.